Hello, and welcome to another edition of Admit One with me, Antonia O'Brien, where each week I challenge a special guest, or in this case, guests, with the task of picking their top three favourite films. Today, we've got our very first duo on the show. It's Mr. Jules Von Hepp and Sarah Powell.
I wonder if it is the princesses thing. So maybe boys weren't really into Disney, so when it was Tarzan and Hercules, maybe the lads were like, not going to see Disney.
I was. Yeah. I was there. I knew that
token.
I saw
everything.
His nipple and I knew that was it, the turning point. Hi, babe.
I wonder how many people thought you were going to say Anton Deck. No,
it's just
Mel and Sue.
You know what? This is better. Jules and Sarah of famous podcast called Jules and Sarah. How would you describe it? What's its spec?
Cheese.
Gosh, yeah. I think we're like two old women on a bus. That's how I describe it. We're like, this is two friends who just chat utter nonsense. And we were sat having dinner, weren't we?
Yeah.
Olives.
Well, we decided.
Olives were involved.
Vine leaves. Ooh, I remember stuff from vine leaves. But we.
What a vegan feast. Yeah.
We decided that we just wanted to see each other more. That's kind of what it
was.
We just didn't see each other enough. So we were like, oh, if we have to do something every week, we can hang out.
How can we formulate this into combining work and seeing each other?
Got to go and see him. It's the podcast. So that is how it started. And it has been. It's one of those things that we started doing and we thought, you know, we can knock this on the head and just go to the pub if we want to.
Yeah, but actually, you know, five people will listen.
Yeah,
that'll be it.
And it's been amazing. We call our listeners the Port Salut crew because we talk about Port Salut cheese a lot. You've written to them.
It's amazing that we're not on the side of a bus with Port Salut.
It's astonishing.
Like, I think we are solely campaigning. And now...
Work with the cheese brand?
No,
only internally.
Yeah, only from our end.
Yeah. But it's lovely because the Port Salut crew, that's our listeners, some of them are now writing to Port Salut and saying that, you know, Jules and Sarah, you need to get involved with them. So if they're listening to Admit One, you know, we're here.
Yes.
Ready.
Still here.
We're the crackers waiting for it.
We like to think of them in France going, what is this? This podcast is Jules and Sarah. They won't leave us alone.
Like, Jules and Sarah. Yeah. I like that, you know, with that kind of, you know, French angle on it.
Yeah, we're going to go on tour. Oh, we're planning to go around.
Yeah, we keep talking about tours and doing, I'd love to do festivals. I think it'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
With wine.
Absolutely.
And obviously Port Salut.
Yeah.
You know what? I've actually never had it.
Well.
A lot of people haven't.
Yeah.
And it is the underdog of the cheese world. Mm.
How do you dress it? Or do you eat it straight hand to mouth?
You open it.
You just bareback it.
Yeah.
No nonsense.
You unwrap, you bite, you
chew.
Yeah, that's it. Until it's all
optional.
Gone. Yeah, cracker optional.
Wine necessary.
If you can be bothered.
Yeah.
So this two old ladies chatting on the bus has done incredibly well. You've got a fan base, the Port Salut
crew.
What has been the best correspondence? Because I've seen on your social media, people from all corners of the globe get in touch.
Yeah.
So what's been the funniest where you thought, oh my God, that's weird?
I think none of it's weird because we're weird. So we embrace weird.
Yeah.
I think there was a moment where somebody sent us a box of Swiss cheese from Switzerland, which cheese does travel well.
Yes,
it
surprisingly
travels very well.
That
was amazing because it was like, we've done it.
Yeah.
People are sending
You've
us free
made
cheese.
It.
Free
like,
cheese. That's all we wanted.
Want? Yeah, that's all we really started it out for. And also we've had like lovely, like heartfelt correspondence. I often get quite upset, especially during festival season where we were recording on a Tuesday and I'd been at a festival all weekend. Everything was setting me off crying.
Yeah.
People who are suffering like with depression and who are listening to the podcast to try and lift themselves up. There was one woman who works at, was it Warner Brothers Studios?
Yeah, she does the tours, like going around the studios. And if people are from the UK, she gets their phone and puts Jules and Sarah, the podcast,
like,
on
you've
it.
You've got to listen, you've got to listen. She wrote in. We've also been invited to someone's wedding.
Yes, we did.
In America.
Yeah.
That, I mean, this is a tour in the making.
Flights, though, haven't they? Business.
A disclaimer. Yeah.
Having both of you on Admit One and asking you between you two to pick your three favourite films, so you've got one that's shared and each of you have chosen a favourite, was that quite a hard thing to do?
It wasn't for me. My film that I've chosen, there was just no question. It's the film that I've seen the most. It's the film that I love the most. Yeah, and so it wasn't hard for me to choose mine.
And
Jules,
difficult.
You were struggling.
It's
I mean, you
so
just confirmed
difficult.
Today and your final choice.
I've been asking people for ages. I get myself in this weird state if I'm asked to pick favourites, and then knowing that, you know, there was an option of three that then gets halved, it's like, the pressure is on. And what I would necessarily call my favourite film, not, it doesn't mean, I listened to the one where my friend Sarah Cox came on, and I liked her analogy of, if you're watching it at 10 o'clock at night and it's on, can you go to bed? And so that actually made me narrow my choices down. I've been asking around all over what people's favourite films are. White Chicks came up. I was like, I wouldn't have picked that myself, and I will not be talking about White Chicks.
I kind of want you to name and shame the person, but let's not. We don't discriminate and admit one. It really is about your favourites, not the best. And what about you two choosing one? A shared favourite film.
That was pretty instantaneous,
wasn't
it? It was. It came really quickly,
yeah, it was
didn't
just
it?
Like, shall we? Yeah, done.
Yeah.
Do you have a memory of film, a first cinema outing, the first film that you watched and you loved?
I can more remember the first films that I cried at. I remember, I don't even know how it came into our house. I think Mum and Dad rented it, E.T., we had to put it off. I was hysterical, completely, just, it was awful. And then the other film that I remember really, really being upset about was Beethoven, which is the family comedy about the St. Bernard, right? I was in pieces. You know when you're little and you're like, I want to go, I don't want to stay till the end. And that's what it was like. And Dad said, no, you've got to stay to the end because you've got to see that it's a happy ending.
Because life is tough, Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Life is tough.
Honestly, I couldn't.
I think we've talked about this on the podcast, yeah, about films that we cried at. Because the first film I cried at was Fox and the Hound.
Oh, yeah.
Hysterical.
One of Disney's more emotional, up there with Bambi.
Yeah.
Bambi didn't shed a tear. I couldn't care less.
Heart
for that
of bloody
deer.
Stone.
But you leave a fox in the woods. Got me. Completely ruined. Head in the cushion. Didn't know what to do with myself. Unconsolable.
Yeah.
Now it's time to dive in and find out your combined top three favourite films. So Jules, I'm going to come to you first. What was your first choice?
Honestly, if someone says to me, what's your favourite film? I always pick Amelie, because for me, it was a very emotional film. It was a film about this daydreaming Audrey Tautou, and I'm a complete daydreamer, but then the time it came out, I was at school and I didn't know that daydreaming was such a thing. So I was at this regimented school, and I watched it recently and I felt the rush of like love for it. But I also watched Notting Hill. And Notting Hill, I think, like, I've listened to that soundtrack over and over and over again.
Once in a lifetime.
All of it. Like, there was even a bit of Gabrielle in there. I think I used to try and like put a mop over my fringe and just be Gabrielle to that song. But Notting Hill
eye patch
is like,
yeah, she never used a mop. Let's be clear.
No, but you know, when you've got hair as short
as mine,
and
you've got to improvise.
Stubborn, you've really got to improvise. Bit of J cloth. But I think Notting Hill is just this incredible. Like, I am such a romantic, and I'm not a patriotic person, but it is incredibly British. And I love the way that the stories are told. And the woman who comes out, the hairdressers with blue hair, and Spike, his T-shirts at the beginning, and the how they meet, and they're from different worlds and they're completely opposite. It's just like,
I mean, there is no way anyone listening to this hasn't seen Notting Hill, but should they not have? What happens?
So Julia Roberts plays almost herself, like a Hollywood actress, and she...
Anna Scott.
She meets Hugh Grant, who owns this bookshop, this travel bookshop, which actually is completely unrealistic. He'd never own that shop in Notting Hill now. Just to point out.
I mean, the rent in Notting Hill is extortionate.
Yeah. He could go online, perhaps.
Yes, it'd be an e-shop.
Yes.
But they have this chance meeting. He spills orange juice over her, and she's obviously always dated actors, and then she meets this normal person and they slowly fall in love. But it has its turbulences, and I think they've both got skeletons in the closet, and it's overcoming those, and it's showing her as herself and not the actress. And I actually watched it on Sunday night, and I was chronically hungover.
Good boy doing your homework.
Always. I'm such a geek. And I actually wailed in my house. Like, it was a lot of like, oh my God, this is so sad. Alone. Completely alone.
Which scenes?
Wailing like a nun in your own front room.
I was wailing like I was at the wall. It was just so much. Which scenes?
I think which scenes are your favourite?
When she stands in front of him and says, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just a girl in front of a boy asking him to love her. God, I'm getting goosebumps now. Oh, I'm there in the bookshop. And I think, which are the other ones that I wear?
I love it when he's a horse and hound.
Yes,
I just love it when he's... we've got some questions from horse and hound. Do you prefer horse or hound? I think that's one of the questions. It's so lovely.
Do you think that's a genre you love in that it's a rom-com, or is that collection of sort of Richard Curtis, wonderful Brit, London-based films what you love
rom-com,
about it? Rom-com,
completely. I am a sucker for a love story, and I never thought I was until recently when someone pointed out how romantic I am.
You are romantic.
I am romantic. I don't like red roses romantic, but I like love stories, and I love how people met, and it's something that I always ask other people, like, how did you meet your boyfriend? How did all this happen? Because it's... like real life, just made into, just fabricated it into a film. And also, I feel this connection with Notting Hill. I didn't live in Notting Hill when the film came out. I lived up north. But now that I'm down here, every time I go to Notting Hill, I feel that rush and that vibe. And I'm like, I can see how that film started and became what it was. And as well, the soundtrack holds such a special place because it was like, there's songs on there, that Ronan Keating song is one of mine and my mum's songs.
That smile on your face lets me know.
I know.
That
I think I was picking up my GCSE results and she drove me into town listening to that. It was incredible.
Well, it's those films. It was kind of pegged as the sequel to Four Weddings and a Funeral, which it isn't. But it's the story revolving around a group of friends that I think he does so well, because everyone has, no matter how big or small, you have your group of solid friends. Mm. And when you watch people getting pissed in their local restaurant and wasted on red wine, I think, for me, I watch it and I connect, and there's something very nostalgic. And it's in London, so it is that sort of sense of home. Yeah. Especially that last bit where they're racing to get to Anna Scott's press conference and they're going past the Savoy, and then they're just in that Volvo going the wrong way, up a one way. You're like, yes, London, Brit films, so exciting.
I think there's also that really poignant scene where they break into the garden and they find the bench and she sits down and the camera... I was thinking about how it must have been shot, because they didn't have drones then, but the camera shoots up and goes on an aerial view of Julia Roberts and Hugh Grant's walking away, and then the music skips and you just hear her go, "Sit with me."
Aww.
That was definitely a wailing moment for me. Big time.
Jules has gone totally misty-eyed. We've lost into the daydream of the garden. Well, luckily, William Thacker and Anna Scott now probably have keys to their very own garden, so good for them. God knows they can afford it. This takes me on to the shared choice. Now, you said it was quite easy to do. Yeah. This is the first for us, having a duo on Admit One. What did you go with and why?
We chose Disney's Hercules.
The underdog.
The underdog. Well, we both love Disney. We both really love it. We grew up with it. Yeah. We reference it a lot. And this kind of came up because I don't know how we were talking about it on the podcast, but we mentioned it. And you said that you quite fancied Hercules.
I think Hercules is
animated,
like the fittest Disney character. Like, Eric, toss him to the side. No thanks. It's all about the genre. In
it's
a toga.
Chin, isn't it? Yeah.
But with a goat that talks. Yeah,
I'd completely forgotten about it, but my boyfriend's got two little girls, and when we're in the car, they've got this Disney playlist. I'm not even joking. It's about 42 hours long. It is just relentless. So every corner of Disney is explored. Like, so when Hercules came on, I hadn't heard it for years, and so, because the music's amazing, because it's all the gospel, and it's like, my soul, Herc was on a roll, person of the week in every Greek opinion poll, and I was loving it.
God, they must love you.
Oh my gosh, like
headlining in the front seat.
Yeah, that was it. I was totally owning it. I was one of the, what do they call themselves?
We were at the sunroof.
Yeah, completely.
Well, they're the chorus.
They are.
What
they're
do
called
they call
the,
themselves?
No, they're the Fates, aren't they?
They're the Fates. The Fates are the three women who come to see Hades. Hades in it is hilarious.
Amazing. Greek mythology in general, I think, is just so... I just love the name. Yeah. It's like a Socrates. How fabulous is that? It just sounds so good to say.
I can see your children being all like, you know, this is Aristotle, Socrates, Zeus.
Hades. Yeah. He's the bad one. What am I like?
So apparently, did you know the Spice Girls were considered for the roles of the Muses?
Oh, really? So it's the muses. That's what they're called, the muses.
Of course, we knew that, didn't we?
Well, I'm sort of...
Let me just throw that fact in your face.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof, gosh, ow. I don't think it would have worked. I'm going to say that now.
Jerry Singh.
Do you know what, though? I mean, look, the Spice Girls are great, but there's only so far they can go. You know,
they're not
you
gospel want... singers.
They are
they're
not gospel
not
singers. No way. But I watched it. So John's kids had never seen it, so we put it on. So I've watched it fairly recently, and it is brilliant because it does that lovely thing that Disney films do where they're really knowing about the parents and there's things that go over the kids' heads.
Yeah.
But there's this moment where Hades is like, he's the god of the underworld and he wants to take over Mount Olympus. And he's like, I'm going to release the, they've got these titans, release the titans. And then nobody's listening. He goes, what, was my hair out? Because his hair's like a flame. And there's moments like
that. I identify with that character
a lot.
Yes,
absolutely.
Really,
but it is. And that's why, I mean, I just love Disney. I get so nostalgic. I'll cry when the castle comes up at the start, you know, with the star flying over. That's it. I'm gone. I'm in pieces.
I find it really bizarre when somebody doesn't like Disney. Mm. There are people who just didn't watch Disney growing up. I'm like, where were you?
Yeah.
What
I find
were
that
you doing?
Weird.
Like, did you ever go to someone's house and they have the whole Disney collection?
So
it was like standing there at the bookshelf being like, wow, this person's epic. I want to be
lot.
Their friend forever.
Yeah.
And think of the width of each VHS. Like, that was a wall covering collection.
That was.
Now
yes.
it's all like Blu-ray is, you know, slick and you can keep it in a cupboard. Whereas then it was
walls
like...
Walls have never been so bare.
No, that was it. It was like a shrine.
Disney was a form of insulation.
Yeah. You could build houses with it.
Yeah.
You did say it was the underdog. It's coupled with Tarzan as one of the most unsuccessful Disneys of all time.
Is it really?
Tarzan,
well, it went through a bit of a drought.
Hunk.
Yeah.
Oh, it did go through a bit of a drought because if you think we, in our childhood, like late 80s, early 90s, we had The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Lion King, big headlining
heavy,
players.
Heavy, yeah. Heavy.
Massive, massive players from Disney. And then, you know, early millennium, late 90s, they lost their way.
Yeah.
But that is why it's interesting. Underdog, but go underdog.
Yeah, totally. I'm amazed. I wonder if it is the princesses thing. So maybe boys weren't really into Disney. So when it was Tarzan and Hercules, maybe the lads were like, not going to see Disney.
I was. Yeah. I was there. I knew that toga.
Right?
I saw
everything.
His nipple and I knew. That was it. The turning point. Hercules' nipple.
God, I just feel really enjoyed that Hercules film.
I just love his Grecian sandals and the way he lunges.
Sarah, I'd like to move on to your independent choice.
Yes.
Which you say it took no time to think because this has been your favourite film of all time.
It has, and it's been forever. It came out in 1992, which was 25 years ago, which is obscene. Oh, yeah, you wouldn't know, would you?
I wouldn't know, darling.
That's a lie. It's Death Becomes Her. And we first saw it. It's my sister and I, and that's another reason why I love it so much, because you know when you know every word to a film. Like, I could just slip into character at any moment and I can ring my sister up and just say to her, Madeline, I need to speak to Madeline at once. And without even hesitating, she'll just go, she's not here. And to have that connection with somebody that you love so much over a film is so great. But the film itself, so I think we first watched it because a babysitter brought it round on video. And I don't even know how old we were, because I think it had been out a while, because obviously, you know, I was, what, 2.5 in 1992. So it appeared, and like you said earlier, when you're a kid, you watch a film and then you just put it straight back on, like the moment it finishes, don't you? We went on holiday, on a girl's holiday, and my friend's daughter came and we had to find her something to watch because she was like, oh God, hanging around with adults. So we showed her Grease and she'd never seen it. She was like 8 and she watched it. I'm not even joking. Over the course of that week, I mean, she watched it 68 times. You know, she just went round again and again. And you can do that when you're a kid for some reason. You're like, put it on again. So we just watched Death Becomes Her. I mean, I've seen it. I dread to think how many times I've actually seen it. But I love it because it's Meryl and Goldie, who are both phenomenal. Also, Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis. And you've completely forget it's Bruce Willis, because now we know him as, you know, whatever. But at that time, you know, he's quite weedy. He's quite, I mean, the makeup on him is amazing. And he's got sort of this receding hairline. And it's just, it's a comment on Hollywood, which still feels so relevant that everybody's desperate to be younger.
What's the film about? Because it's, I know and love it.
Yeah.
But for those who maybe haven't seen Death Becomes Her.
So Meryl Streep plays this kind of washed up actress who marries Bruce Willis, who she stole off her arch kind of rival, who is Goldie Hawn in this film. And they're all, he was a plastic surgeon and he's kind of washed up as well. He's become an undertaker. And they've fallen out.
But he does embalming.
He does embalming.
At a high level.
Really high level.
I have this whole respect for him.
Yes. There's so many great lines about him doing embalming. And he, so Meryl and him, you know, they kind of hate each other in their marriage. She's desperate to be young and she meets this incredible woman who gives her a potion that will make her young forever. And Goldie Hawn has also taken the potion. But what it means is that they can't die. So whatever happens to them, whether they get shot through the middle of them, and there's this moment where Goldie Hawn gets completely shot through her stomach, and there's another moment where kind of Meryl gets her head knocked off, but they can't die. So although they're walking around dead, like it's like a kind of, it's a weird zombie film in a way because they are dead, but it is so quick. It's so funny. It's become very culty, I think. It's quite a cult film now because there's just so many kind of references in it. And I could happily watch it right now. If you put it on right now, even though I've seen it 2,000 times, I would happily watch it again. It's hilarious.
I actually can't believe how dark it is.
Well, it is, but it's
quite twisted.
It's a real black comedy, though.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate black comedy because I'm no good with scary films. Like, rubbish. Utterly dreadful. Yeah. I get scared of everything. I get scared,
you're scared
of the trailers.
Of your own shadow.
I am. I really am. I cannot watch scary films at all. So this isn't scary. This is silly.
It is silly.
Do you know
silly.
What I mean? It's like sort of slapstick that she gets her head knocked off.
Yeah, it's a bloody great film. Death Becomes Her. You're so right about its cult following because 92, we keep discussing the VHS.
Yeah.
But life before Netflix and social media, you just watched it over and over and over again. And before Death Becomes Her, Meryl Streep had won 2 Oscars. So they said in terms of the casting, you know, the three of them are brilliant, but she bought that kind of gravitas that meant that people wanted to come and see what this Oscar winner was doing. And then it was this kind of extraordinary, quite weird film.
It's quite amazing that she did it, really.
Yeah.
You know, because she's, I mean, her character is so unlikable.
Really like your impression. I just want you to do another.
When she goes, there's this moment where she's talking to him at the top of the stairs and it's, there's so many memes of it online now, and she goes, flaccid, flaccid. And it's so
Which I
good.
Couldn't believe it had a PG rating with
yeah.
all that flaccid chat.
Absolutely. Well, that was the 90s for you. They were like, yeah, get on with it. You're all right.
And this does make me laugh because, you know, not to discredit, it was an Oscar-winning film for best visual effects.
Yeah, which actually, they don't look too bad. You know how some
Date
films from
badly.
The 90s, you're like, oh my God, that
like
was
ketchup,
wasn't it? Like
you said, it's 25 years ago.
Yeah, that's it. But actually, it still looks all right because it's got that cult cartoon thing going on. So you kind of forgive it.
Yeah.
A bit Roger Rabbit, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
when her head's kind of corkscrewed on and she is like, oh, excuse me.
That moment when she's got her head on completely back to front and she looks down and she's like, my ass, I can see my ass. I still don't
know. God, it's like Meryl's here.
I know. Look at me, honestly.
Sarah Powell, where the hell is your Oscar?
Where
We've
is
all been
my
asking
Oscar?
That for some time,
yeah.
haven't we?
Where's Meryl wanting to play me?
Oh, well, this does lead me magnificently into the final question of Admit One, where I ask my guest, /guests in this case, if you had to choose an actor or actress, dead or alive, to play you in the story of your life, who would it be and why?
I have to credit Jamie Lang for this answer because I asked him who he thought would play me. He said a cross between Joan Rivers and... Oh, who's the guy who plays Ace Ventura?
Jim Carrey!
Yeah, he was like, those two together, that's it, that's you. I was like, fantastic.
Jamie Lang, credit where credit's due.
Absolutely.
That's a good one.
Joan Rivers is incredible.
So,
from
like, fierce and also funny.
Yes.
And silly. Yeah. That's me to a T.
I was going to say Mary Berry, but actually it turns out that they've got to be an actress or an actor.
Oh, so she's funny. But
she
come
is.
On. She's not, you know, you're like really funny. Mary's like
kind.
A tall
Mary.
She's like a small lol, lowercase lol.
Yeah. You're an LMAO.
Oh, yeah. Stop it. You
R-O-F-L.
guys. So, oh gosh, all I can think of, I can only think of Meryl and Goldie. So I think I'm going to definitely have both of them.
I want to give you Goldie. Can I choose yours?
Please do.
Glamorous,
be my casting
smart,
agent.
Funny. And also I'm seeing there's like touches of Red and Goldie in her heyday.
Yeah.
Before, you know, years of bad highlights, God bless her. But yeah, I see it. I
Thank
see Goldie
you.
Horn for
Oh my
you.
God, I'm having Goldie Horn.
Oh my God, take it.
I'm having her all day long.
This is great. We've really, really uncovered some new projects here. Yeah. Sarah's life is Goldie Horn.
I'm going to write to her this afternoon.
Oh, Jules and Sarah, thank you so much. For your time. Oh, what a pleasure having you in. I just kind of little.
Oh, let's applaud ourselves. Thanks. I regularly applaud myself.
And also, if you're following and listening to Admit One, do let us know what you think. Any questions, your favourite films, and a review on iTunes would be fantastic. Thank you. That's it for this episode. Next week on Admit One.
I read the book listening to the film soundtrack.
I'm exploring the world of film soundtracks and scores with broadcaster, journalist and novelist, Clemency Burton Hill.
It's a bit random, but it really helped. And I've got this very, very, very vivid memory of being at university. I must have been like my second, my third year, and being on a really beautiful summer's day. But there I was lying on the grass reading a book with Philip Glass's exquisite, ravishing score in my headphones, and you know, happy days. Hard to think of a better way to spend the afternoon, really.
Admit One with Antonia O'Brien is an Audioboom production.